It is time for Appraise This with Tim Luke and Greg Strom, the appraisal guys, the frick and frack of Nick and Knack. You can find them on the web at tqag.com and right here on Robinhood Radio. Good morning, guys.
Good morning. Good morning.
Now, I thought I printed it out, and I didn't. So shame, shame, shame on me. Maybe I have it over here. Hang on a second here. Because I actually did. Yes. There it is, son of a gun. And the first thing, because I know nothing about this, if Jill were around, she could talk about it, was a painting by Vincent van Gogh. It was sold at auction, I guess it was last week, for $15.4 million.
A drop in the bucket.
Yes. street scene in... No, this is where Jill could do this. I can't. Street scene in... I'll call it Montmartre, but it's Montmartre, whatever anyways. It was painted in 1887.
Right.
Amazing.
And the interesting thing with this is that the auction was, it sold last Thursday, and it was a live-streamed auction from Paris is where that piece sold. And I'm sure... even you see it in the photograph. I mean, when you see it in a picture, it looks like, oh, this is a very big painting. But then when you get close up, it's not as big as you think. I mean, most of his works. That's how it was. The Portrait of Dr. Gachet, when I was at Christie's, when that sold. And at that point, it sold for $82.5 million. But it's pretty good price for this.
Well, yeah, well, it was what they expected, about $9 million U.S. money-wise
right.
for it, and it came in. You're right about the size of paintings. Like, probably 50% of the world hasn't seen the Mona Lisa, and I think they're going to be disappointed when they do.
Oh, I can tell you firsthand, in 1979, I had the good fortune of spending Christmas or the Christmas holidays in Paris. And one of the places we went, of course, was to see the Mona Lisa. And I stood in line and at that point in time, you could literally walk up and touch it. That's before all of the stuff that's happened. And I was expecting this, a religious experience for some reason. And I get there and I look at it and it's like, oh my God, this is so underwhelming.
it's funny. It's plain size, really. I think people expect the Mona Lisa and other fine pieces of art to be the size of art that billboards or what they did in art class. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's not right. that way. And you're so right. If you go in with those high expectations, it's kind of disappointing. But really, when you step back and think about it, it's still amazing when something is that durable. And I don't mean that the painting itself, but I'm talking about the painting and what it means to people, something that durable. Yeah, it really is
correct.
Amazing.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting with this piece is that it was in a private collection for over a century. So it really had not been publicly seen and viewed. And the other thing about this, which you don't hear too much about, but there was a technology glitch. Like, it's good to know that even it happens at the big auction house, because this was at Sotheby's in Paris. And there was a bidding glitch, actually, that took place during the time that this was sold. And it says that the auction house experienced an unspecified glitch in its online bidding system that forced the vendors to redo the sale at the end of the event. So what they had to do is they probably had to call everybody, make sure that they were back in, and get back into the sale. So, you know, all these little unforeseen things that go on.
Well, especially...
Well, you know, if you look at the painting itself, it's rather unusual looking for a Van Gogh, because
yes,
I think for the most part, people, when they hear the word Van Gogh, they think of
Fields,
when you stand back,
portraits.
it looks like a you can still see the impressionism, the impression, the way it was painted, the impressionism of it. But if you look at this one with the, you know, the farmhouse, it's a little much more specific in its content than most of his other works. And I suppose if you didn't know, and you saw a bunch of Van Gogh paintings on the wall with this mixed in it, you would say, oh, who painted that?
Vincent Van Gogh. You know what's interesting, Tim, getting to you about having to redo the auction, you know, when you have a bunch of millionaires bidding on something that's worth the millions, and you know that millionaires can lawyer up, it's one of those things where you fix it immediately, and you do what you can immediately to make everybody happy.
Most definitely. And what they also reported is that there were an extremely high number of phone bids on top of the online bids from all over, you know, from around the world. So it's a logistical nightmare, if you want to say that, but it is a logistical feat to try and say, especially at that level, oh, we're having difficulties. Let's restart. Let's do this. And I've experienced that on a smaller level, like with Bertoia, when the internet would go out, and of course the people that were in the room, they said, no, you have to keep going. You have to sell it because we're here. They're not. That's not our bid. That's not our fault. And I mean, heckling me from the stage, and I just said back to them, and if it were your item, you would like us to wait, which is what we're going to do. So just be patient, because if you were the seller, you would want us to wait because you want to make sure that you can get everybody who wants to bid into bid.
And also,
and that's what we do.
That's what makes the credibility of these auction houses, because if they lose one iota of credibility, it's gone. That doesn't come back.
Exactly right. Once you lose that, it's done. It doesn't matter it doesn't really matter if it's a legitimate mistake or if it was intentional. At this, you know, at that level, it's going to affect your credibility and your ability to sell significantly. So you know, especially now with online things, there's so much more transparency because everything is live 24/7, and there's so much that you can find out that it puts an extra level of stress, I think, on the auction houses.
You know, another thing, I want to move away from paintings, and this, we talked a little bit about this about photographs, and there's a pretty big auction coming up on photographs from William Henry Fox Talbot, which is going to be held, and that goes to my question once again. Now, of course, photographs I don't think are going to pull what paintings pull, but when you get major photographers and you have auctions like this, I guess there's lots of money that's going to transpire.
And people don't think that photographs can command large amounts, but they can. They really can, depending on who the artist is. So, and you know, they're kind of the photographic auctions are somewhat under the radar for the general public because people just kind of don't think about photographs, a lot of people, as art. So I really like a photographic auction because some of the images are so amazing considering when they were taken and the technology that was used, that in itself is amazing.
No. Well, it'll be interesting to see how this goes, though, Marshall, because it's almost 200 images, and it's an early look into 19th century Victorian Britain on what was going on in that time. But the auction, Sotheby's is selling this, and they're selling it as one lot, as one collection.
I was going to ask you about that. Yeah, it's one lot.
Yeah.
All the photographs. Is that the way most of these photographic auctions go, where it's just one lot and you get X amount, let's say, maybe four or five different collections in one thing? Is this the way it normally is done with photographs?
It depends, because they can break them up, but this is probably they want to keep it together because it individually it may and it really it would depend on the client, the way that they want to sell it, and also they're just thinking that this would sell better as a collective as opposed to the sum of its parts. Now, I've seen it'll be interesting to see what this ends up selling for, because this is a choice, and it's when you look at other things, like collectors have come to us and said, well, I want to sell it as one lot. And I always say, well, and again, depending on the asset class, but if it's a toy collection or some other group of other things, I always tell people, people like the thrill of putting a collection together, not just doing it in one fell swoop, unless they're thinking that they want to have this in a museum or that they want to market it as one collection, because then somebody will do that to put it out there and be donated as part of a collection, do something else. But it's interesting because the collection is estimated at $300,000 to $500,000 for that lot. And it's an interesting choice.
I would think that's the only way you could, unlike the other auctions that you handle and other auctioneers handle, where there's different lots because there's significant individual items. I would think that in photography, especially putting one's works together that cover a multitude of different images is the only way you could really get the dollar value up there.
Right. And I think that's what they're going for here, you know, for something like this.
I still find it unusual, not odd, unusual that they're selling it as one collection, because it's not something that's usually done, because a lot of people, unless you do, like Tim said, you need to have keep the collection together. But it's kind of a gamble, I think, because will it reach its zenith, or will it just, because it's sold as a collection and there are things in there that some people might not want, will they bid less? So it'll be interesting to see, because that's a large grouping. And I don't know. I think it will be interesting to follow to see how this works.
Well, and it's what they've done too, is that it looks like Sotheby's has put this together with a group of other well-known photographers. And the sale is basically all of the pieces are a collection of images. So, you know, whether it's 5, 50, 10, 11, I'm just looking at, they're doing there's a series, The Last Resort, and 11 images from the celebrated fashion photographer Richard Avedon. So it must be a part of what their whole thing is for the sale, is that there's multiples of these. And you know, it'll be, again, interesting to see what this sells for, what the whole thing ends up selling for.
Now, I saw something 2 days ago, and it's a streaming show. It's on I think it's probably on Discovery, but it was so stupid and crazy. I watched like three in a row. And it's where people bring in auctioneers to their houses, and they want to get rid of everything that's in the house, and then they agree that the opening price for every item is $1. And they list everything, and then they have an online auction. And I watched the first one, and I watched the second one, and I watched the third one. And the people doing the appraising at the houses, 99.9% were way off, and they were way high.
Yep.
And they almost turned it into like a football game where during the auction, where they follow the different prices that are going to close in like a minute or 2 minutes.
Right.
And I don't know if you've ever seen the show, but don't watch it. It's aggravating. it's aggravating, yeah. Because I think it's a show that traps people into thinking, hey, you know, I'll do that with my house, because people come out with like $25,000, $30,000, maybe $18,000. But you know what? It still looked like a scam to me.
Interesting.
Well, this is one of the things that we have talked about with clients in the past and said, oh, well, I saw this, you know, I was bidding on this online auction, and it looks like it sold for $10,000, let's say. And it turns out that it could have only been the company that was selling it online being in the room themselves, and they were bidding against whoever was bidding against them, which is not, you know, which is unethical. But you have to know, this is where you have to really understand and know what the auction house history is and how they operate. Because over the years, we have seen for comparables as appraisers, if we were looking for the comparables on a statue, let's say a bronze statue, and we see this one particular auction house coming up with the same image over and over again, that tells us that that auction house is just fishing, trying to get somebody to bid on this so that they can drive the price up. And they say that it sells for, let's say, the minimum, which is $10,000. But actually, they could have been the people who actually put the $10,000 bid on it so that it wouldn't sell for less than that. And they are, that way they're guaranteed that it's going to eventually sell, because a week later you'll see it again in the same auction house, that same image, that same item up for auction with another bid. So you have to know how to interpret the online data, and that's something that takes time to understand.
Well, that too, but also, and I think what you're saying, Marshall, is that the people who are putting values on the stuff, saying that this is what they think it's going to sell for, and you're saying that they are very high when they're saying this is what they think it should bring, is, I mean, that it sounds like what Cash in the Attic was. When I did, yeah, Cash in the Attic, is going in the houses and do this. And I will tell you that the producers on just about every shoot would say, you need to come in, you need to say that it's higher, because we need to have drama, because if it doesn't sell for so much, then we need to have. And I said, well, look, I can't do that. That's going to really compromise my credibility. And I said, you're going to have to find drama somewhere else, but this is what it is. And if I say anything that it's going to be, you know, too much higher, then I will lose my credibility in this entire marketplace that I've been in. And it's just not, it's not the way that it should be done. And the other appraiser that they used, she just said, oh, okay, you want me to say that it's this? Okay, you know, and just did it. And all of, she was always off. And it was just one of those things that when I went into a house in the second season, families were saying, oh, I'm so glad it's you, because that other one seems to be very high in her appraisals, and we want a realistic view of what we might get.
Well, that's why I'm bringing the show up, because I compared it to what you used to do with Cash, yeah, in the Attic, and it's a totally, yeah, different thing. This show obviously is out there once again, and the only reason the show is on the air is to excite people to contact them more to do these auctions. That it's just a shameless self promotion machine. Yes, I know when you have a TV show, you've got to promote and get keep people interested. But I think, Tim, if you, like you just said, if you can keep people interested by just quoting the right prices and then still seeing, yeah, the eventual outcome.
Right. Exactly. And we had to create drama or, well, I didn't create the drama. I said, that's your job. I said, you hired me as to give my professional opinion. And if you want somebody with credibility to give personal opinion, that then that's what you've got. But if you want somebody to just say, oh, it's worth this, and then it doesn't sell for that, well, what good is that? And I said, you're doing a disservice not only to the individuals, because you're duping them into thinking one thing and then there's another, and then also to the public. And this goes out to what Greg was saying, is that you get that out there, and then whenever you show up, people are going to say, oh, well, I don't trust you if you can't tell me what these things are worth. We've seen this time and time again. So it's
and there have been a number of appraisers and auction houses who have done this, and they're not around anymore, because the public will wise up eventually.
I was going to say, this all comes back to what we were talking about, credibility. After I watched this three or four things, I would never ever think of putting on this show again, because there's a credibility factor there and a non-believability factor.
Right.
That's even worse than having a credibility where it's just not believable.
Correct. And that was the thing that I was really adamant about. I said, well, if you want me a part of this, I want to make sure that first of all, things sell for, we're going to say this is what they sold for, is that we're not going to just try to make something up. And the other thing with Cash in the Attic is that they didn't show every single item selling at auction. They showed highlights of things that were featured in the house and then how they actually did. But it was always, and this is what's typical about auctions and typical about collections, is that you can't just look at one item and say, oh, the sale did terrible because that one item didn't perform, when overall you made more money than you thought. When we said, oh, you're gonna walk away with $10,000, and they walk away with $15,000, but then they say, oh, but that one item only sold for $50. It wasn't a big success. And it's like, you can't just focus on that one thing. You have to look at the whole. And I think that's the thing. And that's the thing with the whole series, in the way that was set up, is that they weren't looking at individual performances. You have to look at what the entire collection brings, and not individually.
Well, anyway, it was just one of those things that caught my eye. It
gets me worked up.
If I can find out the name of the show, I'll pass it along to you guys via email, and you can watch it once and vomit. Is what you can do.
Yes.
All right, guys. Well, stay warm and safe down there in Florida.
Thanks. Have a great week.
Thanks. Have a great week.
Take care, guys.
Take care, Marshall.
Bye-bye. Tim Luke and Greg Schramm, the appraisal guys, the frickin' frack of Nick and Knack, Treasure Quest Appraisal Group. You'll find them on the web, tqag.com, and you'll find them right here on Robinhood Radio, robinhoodradio.com. Click on demand. Click on Appraise This with Tim Luke and Greg Schramm.